danger if he was to become the mayor. You know, some of the people that I spoke to for this story, I kind of asked to elaborate. When you say you live in fear of him, what do you actually mean? And the explanation that I heard was that his criticism of Israel, which has now been accepted by, you know, multiple human rights organizations, is equivalent to advocating for violence against Jews. What I argue is that kind of assumption of Muslims is inherently racist, to assume that we have hatred towards Jews and to kind of use that as a bludgeon to make it so that our views on Palestine can't be expressed publicly.
Mm-hmm. And of course, so many thousands of his organizers or canvassers on the ground are Jewish New Yorkers.
Exactly.
I want to end by thanking you. Meher Ma'amed is a staff editor for the New York Times opinion section. Her latest essay for the New York Times is headlined, "When I Look at Zohran Mamdani, Here's What I See." In the print version, the headline was, "What Does It Mean to Be a Good Muslim in America?" That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Nicole Salazar, Sarah Nasser, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamaria Studio, John Hamilton, Ravi Karan, Hani Masood. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Tune in every second and fourth Saturday night, midnight to 3 a.m. Sounds Unsound. Sounds Unsound. Sounds Unsound. Only on KBOO.
Sound. Support for KBOO comes from its members and from 988 Oregon, a public service providing help from trained counselors for when stress, worry, and sadness strike. Help is available by calling or texting 988. More info at 988oregon.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, more court proceedings hold back National Guard troops from Portland.
Portland City Councilor Candace Avalos' house catches fire in a possible arson case.
And Portland police start ticketing minor offenses of peaceful ICE protests.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, October 27th, 2025. I'm Terrence Burns.
And I'm Dave Johnson. A new judicial hold keeps National Guard troops out of Portland until at least Tuesday evening. That's so the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals can vote on whether to rehear the case against troop deployment. A three-judge panel ruled to allow the deployment, but the rest of the 29 judges in the court could change that decision if they decide to take the case. It's rare that the court would do a fuller review, but experts say the state of Oregon made a compelling case that the judge's decision was inconsistent with precedent. The order is the latest in a battle over whether President Trump can deploy National Guard troops to protect ICE facility in South Waterfront. It's likely put off any such deployment until next week, at the earliest. U.S. District Judge Karen Immergut held a hearing on Friday to determine whether that Ninth Circuit ruling voids either of her temporary restraining orders blocking National Guard deployment. That process and a Wednesday trial hearing in the full case would likely be delayed if the Ninth Circuit decides to review the restraining order. Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield said of the new ruling, quote, This decision gives the court time to fully consider the serious constitutional questions at stake. It also ensures there won't be a federal deployment while that process plays out. An important step in protecting Oregonians' rights and keeping our community safe. End quote.
Police are investigating possible arson at Portland City Council member Candace Avalos' home. Portland Fire and Rescue arrived at 2:40 a.m. to find two cars and carport on fire. No one was in the vehicles or hurt, and Avalos escaped with her cat Valentino. Portland officials said the cause of the fire is still undetermined, but is considered suspicious in nature. Portland Fire Unit has asked if anyone with information or tips to contact the tip line at 503-823-3473. Avalos said on Blue Sky that she, quote, woke up Sunday morning to her carport, and home engulfed in flames, end quote. Avalos represents District 1, East Portland, and is part of the council's progressive bloc, commonly known as Peacock. Avalos, who is Black and Latina, received a lot of online vitriol during her campaign and time in office. This is not the first time a suspected arson case hit the Portland City Council. In January of 2024, then City Commissioner Rene Gonzalez reported that someone set fire to his father's Honda Accord. Police said that fire was suspicious as well. Before leaving office, Gonzalez filed a legal notice threatening to sue the city for not sufficiently responding to threats prior to the incident.
A coalition of 225 Oregon community organizations says the U.S. Department of Agriculture is withholding billions of dollars of contingency funds it could use to fund Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program's benefits through November. The groups say if SNAP benefits are suspended at month's end, 18% of Oregon's population, as well as the state's economy, will be affected. KBOO's Craig Woods reports.
U.S. Department of Agriculture says it lacks the funding and legal authority to continue SNAP benefits past October 31st without a federal budget resolution. But a coalition of 225 Oregon community organizations says that isn't true. David Whelan is with Partners for a Hunger-Free Oregon. He says the USDA has $5 to $6 billion in contingency funds that will cover the cost of SNAP benefits nationally for most of November.
USDA has a congressionally authorized contingency fund that they won't commit to sending out to folks. Hunger should not be a bargaining chip in this shutdown process.
About 760,000 Oregon residents, or 18% of the state's population, receive SNAP benefits. Whelan adds SNAP is not only important for people who need it to buy food, the program also benefits local grocery stores where SNAP dollars are spent. A 2020 study found SNAP supported nearly 200,000 jobs in the independent grocery industry. Jimmy Jones, who heads the Mid-Willamette Valley Community Action Agency, says the suspension of SNAP benefits would force more Oregon families to choose between buying medicine, paying rent, and buying food.
This has all the makings of a just terribly unjust and painful and destructive moment. It's an act of economic violence that is going to be levied against our low-income population, and I am quite fearful for the future if the government is not reopened.
Jones notes this is the latest in a series of policies that affect Oregonians. He points to the March shutdown of a pandemic-era food program, which cut food bank supplies by 20%, and the July passage of H.R. 1, which made cuts and added work requirements to SNAP. He says too many people in Oregon are living on the edge.
They're really just one missed paycheck, one injury that sends them to the hospital, one piece of bad luck away from not only not being able to feed their family, but not being able to stay in their homes.
Oregon families enrolled in SNAP receive an average of $250 a month. The USDA estimates in a weak economy, $1 in SNAP benefits generates $1.50 in economic activity. For KBOO News and the Oregon News Service, I'm Craig Woods.
Portland police are a regular presence at the protests at the ICE facility on McAdam Avenue. The role has been largely hands-off compared to other protests, making occasional arrests and helping to direct traffic. This weekend, that changed. Officers cleared protesters' tents, ordering the sidewalks be cleared. They say they'll begin enforcing low-level violations like blocking the sidewalk, consuming alcohol or drugs in public, and jaywalking. It was a chaotic scene on Saturday evening as protesters worked to clear their setups with a jeering crowd of counter-protesters nearby. Protesters accused police of helping ICE enforcement. Police say they're just enforcing existing city code. Even with new police involvement, protesters say they're undeterred. Seth Todd, the original protester in the inflatable frog costume, told Oregon Live, quote, "I think it's pretty lame that they're going to enforce something as small as jaywalking when they could be spending their time focusing on actual crimes," end quote.
Newly minted Oregon State Senator Christine Drazen, Republican of Canby, announced she will once again enter the race for Oregon governor in 2026. Drazen was picked by party leaders earlier this month to fill the Senate seat vacated by former Senate Minority Leader Daniel Bonham for Senate District 26. Senator Drazen is considered a top Republican contender for the race to run against incumbent Governor Tina Kotek. In an announcement at a press conference earlier today, Drazen went on the record saying, quote, "We are going to make Oregon number one as the best place in the nation to raise your family, to start a business, grow your business, and get a world-class education," end quote. The Democratic Party of Oregon released a statement following Drazen's announcement saying, quote, "Christine Drazen's announcement makes one thing clear. Donald Trump is officially on the Oregon ballot." Drazen has sided with Donald Trump on deploying the National Guard onto Oregon streets instead of standing with local law enforcement and Oregon business leaders, end quote. No word yet on how Drazen plans to balance her new role as state senator with her campaign to become the next Oregon governor. The next gubernatorial election is in 2026.
The White House says prospects are good for a trade deal with China. President Trump may ramp up strikes on alleged Venezuelan drug smugglers, and legal professionals work to protect the rule of law. With that story and more, it's Simone Perez with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I believe when the announcement of the deal with China is made public, that our soybean farmers will feel very good about what's going on, both for this season and the coming seasons for several years.
Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent tells ABC the anticipated trade deal with China will be good for farmers who lost their entire export market. He says China will loosen export controls on rare earths, while the U.S. will back away from threatened steep tariffs. President Donald Trump is set to meet with the Chinese president this week. While in Malaysia, Trump attended a ceasefire signing between Thailand and Cambodia. The White House says the threat of increased tariffs pushed the two countries into halting skirmishes along their contested borders. Reversing position, the president says the administration might brief members of Congress on possible land strikes against alleged Venezuelan drug smugglers. Some in Congress say even with briefings, those kinds of attacks would still be illegal and unconstitutional. Kentucky Republican Senator Rand Paul says even at sea, using the military to enforce the law without proof amounts to extrajudicial killing.
The drug war has typically been something we do through law enforcement, and so far they have alleged that these people are drug dealers. No one said their name, no one said what evidence, no one said whether they're armed, and we've had no evidence presented. So at this point, I would call them extrajudicial killings.
The U.S. has hit 10 vessels in international waters, killing more than 40. According to the Washington Post, Trump officials have defied 1 in 3 judges who have ruled against him. A Supreme Court ruling now means the president can't be prosecuted for crimes committed in office, and Trump has ordered the Justice Department to prosecute his perceived enemies. Prominent New York attorney David Boies says thousands of lawyers, judges, and ordinary citizens are starting to organize to defend democracy and the rule of law.
These kind of attacks on judges, threats to disregard decisions, they're absolutely irretrievably, irredeemably wrong. We know that.
With the government shutdown in week four, major U.S. airports are reporting problems. Air traffic controllers are calling in sick at already short-staffed towers. Meanwhile, half of the states say they expect SNAP nutrition benefits may be disrupted. Food banks say they have no way to keep up with the expected demand. Meanwhile, government-run grocery stores are gaining traction in New York City. Leading mayoral candidate Zora Mamdani says they could fight rising grocery costs and urban food deserts. Liz Miller with the Boston Food Access Council says they're considering them there as well, especially for neighborhoods without stores.
They don't have it at the price point that they need. It's not physically accessible to them. It's not meeting their cultural needs. So it's really valuable that the municipal government is wanting to explore this and think through some solutions.
Critics of the program say government-run grocery stores would put other local independent grocers at a disadvantage. But Miller says especially with SNAP benefits under threat and food pantries at a breaking point, people need better options. I'm Simone Perez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at Public News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after the newscast for Coast Range Radio. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with an overnight low of roughly 43 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy too with a high of 57. Today in history, on this date in 1904, the New York City subway made its inaugural run. It soon became America's largest subway system. Every day, it moves 4.5 million riders. The quote of the day is from American President Theodore Roosevelt, born this day in 1858, who said, quote, "I wish to preach not the doctrine of ignoble ease, but the doctrine of the strenuous life, the life of toil and effort, of labor and strife, to preach that highest form of success which comes not to the man who desires mere easy peace, but to the man who does not shrink from danger, from hardship, or from bitter toil, and who, out of these, wins the splendid ultimate triumph." End quote.
A Native community in Arizona gets a new supermarket after relying on convenience stores for years. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Gila River Indian community in Arizona has long relied on convenience stores to feed its 13,000 residents who otherwise may have to drive as far as half an hour away to neighboring cities with grocery stores. But as KJZZ's Gabriel Piatrazio reports, a new market a decade in the making has opened much closer to home.
This isn't a Bash's, it's not a Safeway or a Walmart.
Duncan Winston with Gila River Development says the tribe's new 14,000-square-foot supermarket in the heart of Sacaton is much more than a store. It's a symbol of their sovereignty, since few, if any, tribes outright own their own grocers.
We don't want to leave that in the hands of a larger chain to determine who gets what. We want to be able to fight for ourselves and bring the necessary goods to our community when we need them.
From fresh produce and butchered meats to a deli serving local favorites, like the Works Burger.
One of the biggest demands from the community was you got to bring the Works back, and so we've done that.
But that doesn't come cheap because of what some refer to as resflation.
We have experienced it here. I mean, it's difficult finding reputable vendors who are willing to bring us goods and services at a fair price. Although we are rural, we are a lot closer to the metropolitan Phoenix area than a lot of the other tribes in Arizona.
For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Piatrazio.
Sea Alaska Heritage Institute recently opened its new science education building. The space and the educators inside are working to combine traditional knowledge with new technology to expand access to science for young people in Juneau, Alaska. KTOO's Yvonne Krumrie reports.
At a ceremony, Tlingit language professor Hune Lance Twitchell said that bringing traditional ways of being into the present isn't a contradiction.
It's not a living in two worlds situation. It's living as an indigenous person with multiple languages and multiple identities and being just fine with it. You don't have to be just one thing.
And the new SHI Indigenous Science Building around the corner carries that sentiment in all the services it offers. The building on Heritage Way hosts a digital media lab with a podcast booth and video production software, an Indigenous science research lab that studies cultural resources like seaweed and clams, and a maker space with a digital wood carving machine. That last one made name tags instructors are wearing as they lead tours of the new building. In the traditional foods and medicine kitchen, instructor Seichtin Jamian Hasselquist says she and others are bringing old ways to process and preserve food into the present.
Whatever people can dream up that they would like to do in this kitchen, I think that we could try to make their dreams happen.
With freeze dryers, pressure cookers, dehydrators, and space to build traditional drying racks, Hasselquist says they're making and preserving traditional foods that elders would make when she was a kid, like cheese kahak, a rich and smoky paste made of fermented salmon eggs. She scoops some out of a glass jar and spreads it on a cracker for anyone who wants to try it.
Someone tasted that cheese kahak, and they took one bite, and they said, "Oh my gosh, I'm getting emotional. I haven't tasted this for 30 years. It's been 3 decades, and they thought that they would never try it again."
Elders have been approaching Hasselquist with foods they remember from childhood but don't know how to make.
If we could have workshops and share that knowledge, and we're rebirthing, you know, this indigenous way of living and being.
Next, she wants to find out how to make cold-pressed seal grease. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The demolition of the White House East Wing ignored foundational federal preservation laws, according to historic preservation experts. The move comes amid broader scrutiny of the National Historic Preservation Act. Tramell Gomes has more.
The swift demolition of the White House East Wing has preservation experts alarmed about the bypassing of long-standing federal review processes. The White House and President's Park are designated National Historic Landmarks, requiring any alterations to undergo review by multiple agencies. Dr. Clary Larkin, director of the Historic Preservation Program at the University of Florida, says the project ignored legal safeguards that have protected America's historic treasures since the 1960s.
There's a blatant ignoring of the review process. The 1966 National Historic Preservation Act. Every previous project to the White House since the 1960s has undergone this review process.
The National Historic Preservation Act created what's known as Section 106 review, requiring federal agencies to consider effects on historic properties. The Advisory Council on Historic Preservation, National Capital Planning Commission, and Commission of Fine Arts typically review White House projects, but these bodies are inactive during the government shutdown. Larkin points to specific preservation standards that the demolition appears to violate, particularly those protecting historic materials and spatial relationships. She says these guidelines have been spelled out.
New additions, exterior alterations, or related new construction will not destroy historic materials, features, and spatial relationships that characterize the property. The new work will be differentiated from the old and will be compatible with the historic materials, features, size, scale, and proportion, and massing to protect the integrity of the property and the environment.
The Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee has scheduled a hearing this week to examine Section 106 of the National Historic Preservation Act, raising concerns among preservation advocates that the administration may seek to weaken the law. The National Trust for Historic Preservation has called for pausing demolition until proper review can occur. This is Tramell Gomes from Mississippi News Connection.
After 25 years, Pierce County is recognized as a leader in implementing alternative youth justice methods. The county, just south of Seattle, has seen an 88% reduction in youth detention since it began implementing systems that reward young people for engaging with their communities. Isabel Charlet has the details.
In the past 25 years, Washington's Pierce County has successfully transformed its juvenile justice system away from detention and more towards strategies backed by neuroscience. By focusing on keeping young people connected to their communities during court proceedings, the county has achieved an 88% reduction in youth detention. According to County Probation Program Manager Kevin Williams, a key factor was a 2004 Juvenile Detention Alternative Initiative grant, which increased engagement from youth and families and led to fewer violations.
We've seen a stronger relationship between young people, how they view themselves, how they think the community views them. All these things are increasing in a healthier way. And what we're trying to really get down to is addressing root causes and build young people up.
The prefrontal cortex, the brain region responsible for judgment and impulse control, doesn't fully mature until around age 25, according to the National Institute of Mental Health. Research shows adolescents, or the ages between about 14 and 24, is similar to early childhood in terms of how much the brain develops. Lisa Lawson, president and CEO of the Annie E. Casey Foundation, is the author of Thrive, a book on youth development. She says adolescents are still developing critical skills that shape decision-making and emotional control.
Many people misunderstand this period of life, but it's a time when young people really develop so many important skills, like learning to manage their emotions, making thoughtful decisions, and building deeper relationships.
Williams says Pierce County's opportunity-based probation starts with setting small goals like consistent attendance at school or meeting with a mentor. As young people make progress, they're able to earn more opportunities, including getting off probation earlier.
Opportunity-based probation is about helping young people practice success, not just avoid failure. So instead of punishing mistakes, we focus on creating opportunities for accountability through connection and learning.
The number of incarcerated youth dropped by over 70% in the 25 years leading up to 2023. Despite this decrease, the U.S. still incarcerates youth at a higher rate than many other countries, according to the Prison Policy Initiative. For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet.
Starting November 1st, New Mexico will become the first state in the country to launch universal child care. A move the governor predicts will save parents about $12,000 per child per year. Roz Brown reports.
New Mexico families are expected to save thousands of dollars on child care in the coming years as the Land of Enchantment becomes the first state to adopt universal child care. U.S. Department of Labor data from 2022 show families across the country spent anywhere from 9 to 16% of their median income for full daycare for one child. The estimate is 11% of a New Mexico family's income, according to the finance website Wallet Hub. Jacob V. Hill with New Mexico Voices for Children says getting agreement on the system from children's advocates and state policymakers is a huge milestone.
Beginning November 1st, there will be no more income requirements for subsidized child care. And then also what will come into effect is what they're calling the enhanced reimbursement rate.
Higher reimbursement rates are intended to help providers cover costs, recruit and retain staff, and improve the quality of child care. By paying a higher wage to caregivers, V-Hill says the state hopes to recruit more home-based providers. Child care assistance funds from the state will go directly to providers selected by parents, with rates of reimbursement based on the age of the child, the care facility, and the quality of care. V-Hill says it should relieve significant financial pressure now faced by many New Mexico families.
The cost of childcare being what it is, having that no longer be a worry is just a huge economic boon, allowing them to save more money, have more housing stability, things like that.
In making the announcement, Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham said the program would save the average family about $12,000 per year per child. The state estimates it needs 5,000 more early childhood professionals to make the new system work, but doesn't expect to have all of them in place when the program begins November 1st. I'm Roz Brown, New Mexico News Connection.
Solar farms can bloom with life, not just energy. By planting wildflowers instead of grass, developers are creating habitats for bees, butterflies, and birds. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on that story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Fields of solar panels are popping up across the U.S., and they can provide more than just clean energy.
If we design them thoughtfully with pollinator-friendly plants instead of like a traditional turf grass or gravel,
those sites can really do double duty as a restored habitat.
Andy Grinstead of the Pollinator Partnership says bees, butterflies, and other pollinators are critical for the health of ecosystems and the survival of food crops. But a lot of pollinator habitat has been destroyed. So his group helps landowners and solar developers create new pollinator habitat under and around solar panels. A diverse mix of plants helps attract different species.
For example, milkweed is an essential host plant for monarch butterflies. There's coneflowers and bee balm that provide nectar and nesting habitat for bees. There's goldenrods that bloom late into the season when food is scarce and pollinators really need it.
Deep-rooted native plants also help the soil absorb more water, reducing runoff and erosion. And though establishing pollinator habitat costs more upfront than planting grass, Grinstead says it can save money over time on mowing and maintenance. So there are many benefits to transforming the ground around solar panels into habitat buzzing with life. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, October 27th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Dave Johnson, Craig Woods, Landon Ruiz, and Josh Salem. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Sherry Meredith. Special thanks to Tramel Gomes, Roz Brown, Antonia Gonzalez, Zimone Perez, Isabel Charlet, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast version of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Dave Johnson.
And I'm Terrence Burns. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 443.